November 4, 2018, it's the Watt from Pedro Show. Thank you. Watch for Pedro show. Back with Brother Matt. Brother Matt,
yes,
thanks.
Yes, overdue.
Yeah, being on board once again. Overdue, I think the last show we did together was September 8th.
So, yeah, it's overdue.
Partner 2 months, yeah. And in fact, because of all the people doing music up there and you want to see what's up, October had 9 shows.
Wow, we.
And except had
record,
6.
Huh?
Yeah. Cool. Absolutely. Sometimes it'd be 9 for the half the year.
Next year,
you're
going to be going
like
daily.
That. Yeah. I don't know, brother. But remember that one time you had a notion about video?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You wanted us to do these shows like with the pictures. Yeah.
That would have been a whole nother problem.
You can't do it naked. No butt floss bikini. We started with Moments Notice, John Coltrane, and then, because we're not just by ourselves, through the magic of those engineers in Estonia with their Skype invention, we got Rachel Taylor Brown from Portland, Oregon.
Welcome.
Welcome aboard, Rachel.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I'm so happy to be here. Thanks for having me on.
No problem. And we played your song from your new record, Little Fucker.
Yeah,
that's not off the new record, but it's off of the previous record. And
you're gonna have to learn me. In fact, you're gonna have to learn me about your whole fucking thing. So please tell me your earliest musical recollection.
Oh, geez.
There's no wrong answer, really.
Well, I grew up in a family with 7 kids total.
In Portland?
In Portland, well, in Boring, Oregon, which is a suburb of Portland.
Kind of a lame name.
I knew you were going to laugh.
I think this is what Elon Musk is calling his tunnel shit in Culver City. Right? Isn't the Boring?
Yeah.
Okay, go on. 7 kids in Boring, Oregon.
Yeah, so Boring is pretty much exactly as you would imagine it. And everybody in my family, I grew up after 4 boys, and they all had bands. And my brother Jeff, my late brother Jeff, who died in 1996.
Oh, I'm sorry.
He was an amazing musician, amazing pianist, amazing guitarist. He played both equally well, which was kind of weird. And
he was kind of good.
He was a just beautiful musician, really, really good. And when I was a kid, I mean, I guess this was probably around 4 years old or whatever. It's when we'd moved to the new house that was out in Boring. And he used to play the piano, and I had the idea that if I went over and, like, if I got to it freshly enough right after he'd been on it, and I sat there and put my hands on the keys, I thought maybe
what you're saying is, Rachel, like there's a piano in the living room?
Yeah, Wurlitzer Spinet. A really shitty piano.
Yeah, but you had one. So there's music in the pad that you're growing up in. What about your parents? Your mom and pop, were they listeners or music people, players?
Well, they were listeners, but they both had good voices. My mom was a really good singer, and she'd sing with the radio, and I always loved to listen to her sing. My dad just sang really weird, dorky songs. I don't know where he got them, but he had a really small repertoire of like super weird songs, and so they were both.
What do you mean by super weird? Like they're coming to take me away,
Dr. Demento stuff.
You know, like those songs from the, I guess they were from the 30s or the 40s. The chemo, chymo, stare, stare, mahi, mahoma, rubber stick, a pump, a nick, a swoop, bang, nip, tap, poly, mitchy, cameo, I love you, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, some like Masonic passwords.
Do another one.
Yeah. Okay. But anyway, they're instruments, they're players, but the instrument is the voice.
For them,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And then your brother actually plays the guitar and the drum, piano. What about at school?
I got involved in choir pretty young.
Okay.
I guess it started in 6th grade with Mrs. Betcher, and she had the boys sing Anchors Away and the girls sing Waves of the Navy.
Right, I remember those. My pop was a sailor. Rachel, did they think about we got a piano in the house. Maybe you should take piano lessons, and maybe because this osmosis maybe ain't working. So, you know, we'll get you a piano teacher. Did they ever suggest that?
Well, yeah, I did get shoved into piano lessons at around 6, but I've been playing for ear by that time, by ear from that already for a couple years before that. And so I'd gotten into the habit of, you know, I'd strengthened my ear pretty much already before I got into piano lessons, and I hated piano lessons.
Yeah, a lot of people I talked to about that, very negative experience. Some people had good ones. I think it depended on the teachers, and a lot of these people should find other work. I'm just guessing.
Well, I had a nice teacher, Mrs. Hunt, but she was...
I'm not saying a nice or unnice person. I'm saying good at making music interesting that would inspire you.
Well, yeah, she was trying to teach me basically to read, which is an honorable goal, you know. I mean, it's something I wanted, but I was impatient with it, and what I would do is I would ask her to play it. And then I'd pick it up by ear, and I'd play it back and pretend I was reading.
Yeah.
And so I cheated my way, basically, through all my music lessons. And I did that all the way through high school. I mean, I did concert choir and all that in high school.
What about marching band?
No, I wish I'd done marching band. I didn't play anything.
No, you don't.
Yeah, you did. You played your voice. Come on, that's an instrument. It's probably your first instrument, unless you consider feet drumsticks, because that might have been the first instrument. So it's either first or second. What was the first record you bought yourself, Rachel?
I'm sorry, are you guys really brothers, or are you like...
Yeah, of course we're really brothers.
You're actual brothers.
Well, part of the human race. So you're our sister, right? Look, what was the first record you bought yourself?
That I bought myself. It was probably The Carpenter, Close to You. I was really little.
She was drummer lady.
She was a great drummer, wasn't she?
Downey. In fact, their practice pad got taken over by the Suburban Lawns, and where the Reactionaries, which is the band before the Minutemen. So there is a slight connection.
Wow.
So what was the first gig that you went? What was that, brother?
Who'd imagine?
Yeah, who'd imagine? What was the first gig you went to, Rachel?
Probably one of my brother's gigs. And it was probably Jeff's band, which was called Midnight Sun.
I played a club in Mississippi, in Jackson, Mississippi, called Midnight Sun.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, and that night...
That's where my dad was born.
Get
was
this, Jackson. That night, the police academy had the big graduation, so we had lots of young, drunk hombres celebrating at the Midnight Sun. Opening band was a Chili Pepper clone band. Yeah, it was interesting.
Red Knot Chili Peppers.
Something like that. I'm just curious about that kind of stuff. So, and what was it, like a club?
I think it was a party, probably the parents of one of the band members, because they were in high school.
Okay, house party.
At that point. And, yeah, and they played covers of The Beatles and The Who and CCR. And
they didn't write their own songs?
No, I don't think they ever did. They were.
So you must be around my age, because that was the culture of the 70s. That's the reason for the whole fucking movement coming into being, because everybody just copying songs off records.
Yeah, my brother's bands were in the 70s, yeah.
Yeah, me, yeah. Anyway, I was 13 in 1970. You know the first gig I went to?
What?
Me and D-Boone went and saw T-Rex. Everybody does that. Everybody I tell that to.
Well, okay. That's quite a first show.
Yeah, you know, everybody's embarrassed about their first show. I never have to be embarrassed.
Yeah, you don't mind.
No,
Bo Diddley.
Brother Max is Bo Diddley. That's fucking bitching.
Really?
Yeah.
He wouldn't shit you.
You guys are making this up.
No, we ain't. Look,
you probably first saw like, what's his name? Pat Boone.
Oh, yeah.
Wearing leathers
and doing Tutti Frutti all night long. Yeah. Okay, you always sold more than Little Richard. Look, did you do the thing like with your school friends, a band in the bedroom or the garage or the basement?
No, never. My brothers did, and
I
got to sing with their bands. You know, they let me sit in, and actually, they started when they knew I could play things by ear. My brother's friends. Who were in the band would ask me to, like when they started getting married and things like that, they'd ask me to learn things by ear to like play at their weddings. So
to bring you into the band.
Yeah.
Okay, like pinch hitter.
Well, no.
Utility player.
No, I would get to play with them maybe when they were practicing in the basement. That was it. One of my brothers was a drummer.
Okay, placeholder.
Yeah, I was a placeholder. Well, thank you very much.
Sure, I want to play this song, Me Hurting You, okay?
You hope you can forget me, you're hoping. Magdalene.
Marcel. Figure sir in
person behind that bitch is doing.
We'll be right back.
Watch for Pedro show. Yep, that was Rachel Taylor Brown doing Me Hurting You. Was that off the new record?
That was also off the previous record.
Okay, I'm fucking up twice.
No, you're not.
Right. Well, actually, they're all previous because yesterday is gone. Right? So the next
right.
record, right, right. Then we had Bitch Face, brand new band with Sid Straw.
Oh, Peter cool. Reardon,
yeah.
Hey, Sid.
Yeah. Change the Locks, which is Lucinda Williams?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's one of her teams. Bullets Are Balloons out of Spokanistan with Antics. That sounds like Tuesday, huh? Erratum Musical for three voices. This was a piece composed by Marcel Duchamp. It's done here by the SCN Ensemble. It's a long time ago, so you hear some artifacts. But Marcel Duchamp did so much. And went through so many different movements, and it's just incredible cat, and big inspiration to me. And I found that by accident. See,
cool,
the internet
accident.
Is an all bad, right? There's some good things. Then Yoko Ono, brand new record from her, 85 years old. Hint, hint, you got to keep going, Rachel. Woman Power. And then Pussy Riot with Track About Good Cop. Which one is that? And then Feel Specters, get it? Oklahoma City with Peachy Fucking King. And then finally, Getcher by Rachel Taylor Brown. And Getcher, I assume my pop would hate me because that makes it a nice idea with me. But you want to get something, right?
Yeah, and that is off the new album.
All right.
Yeah.
I wanted to say that, but you beat me to it. Okay, let's get back to your story. So you start out being a place as far as playing with other people in music as a placeholder for your brother's band. Now, what led you to doing your own music, Rachel?
I'd always written songs. I mean, I remember, you know, what you did as a kid in Boring, starting from the age of six, was the berry bus would come in the summers and you'd go pick berries all day.
Whoa.
And it like strawberries.
Yeah,
and
sure.
Raspberries and things like that, and I would write songs, like really bad songs, when I was picking berries, and that was really young. And I wrote songs all through, before I started taking, I was writing songs from that age on pretty consistently, and I didn't really start taking it seriously until I was in my 20s, and that was when my husband got me a four-track Tascam Porta 05 recorder. And it just sort of, you know, it was great. It was like the best toy ever. You know, the fact that I didn't have to use several or two tape recorders and record parts over, you know.
Oh, yeah, you're talking sound on sound. You could overdub and be a one-woman band. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Les Paul. He's the pioneer. He talked to me about that once.
Really?
He brought Mary Ford in, but he was the... Well, maybe she was. Who knows? But he told me, yeah, they got that going. So you get to make songs that you can layer up stuff. But did you ever, when you wrote these songs, they were kind of for you. You didn't imagine playing them for other people?
Not at that time, no.
Okay. So when does that change?
Well, I had, and one of the reasons I didn't think of that at that time was that I was sort of, I guess, on my way to this nervous breakdown, and then I had the nervous breakdown, and then I was kind of out of commission for a good number of years, like 8 years or so, working through shit, and I wrote a lot during that time. And when I at the end of it, or it wasn't really the end of it, it's never the end of it, truthfully, but...
That's the good news, right?
But I had a house painter that was working outside our house, he overheard me playing the piano, and he came in, and he wound up being my bass player and my friend John.
Wow.
And he said, hey, do you have a tape or something that I could give to this friend of mine who has a studio? And I happened to have the Tascam Porta 05.
Right.
I actually did have a tape, and so I gave it to him, and then he handed it off to this very talented guy who owned a studio just in his basement called Larry Schaefer, and Larry helped me make my first album. He engineered and recorded my first album for me, and, you know, it was a learning process. Kind of for both of us, because I don't think he'd work with anyone who had, you know, things with multiple parts, so many parts to them, because I had some huge arrangements on that first album, but you know, I was really ambitious in my head, and it was an education to find out how hard it is to make that happen. You're just in the studio, but it was fun.
Yeah. So who's your bass? Is that John, the bass man?
John Huckfeld was my first bass player.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay. But so we got to give him credit because he makes the connect.
Oh, yeah. I try to give him credit all the time.
No, I mean right here at the moment.
Yeah.
Of course. But what about, so you hadn't done a gig yet?
Oh, no, I've done a lot of gigs.
Okay, no, at that point.
Oh, well, yeah, I've done a lot of gigs because
Tell me about your first gigs, because what I understand is you're writing songs, picking berries, then the problems, so you're still writing songs during the problems. And then you found a house painter who connects you for your first record. But I didn't hear anything about gigs. Tell me about your first gigs. How'd those happen?
I started out doing like theater and musical theater. I played Amaryllis in Music Man when I was in sixth grade. And then I got shoved by, you know, or encouraged by... Encouraged is a better word than shoved, but choir directors and things in high school. Into my senior year in high school, I got my choir director wrote a note to my parents and said, "You should get her in voice lessons." And I started taking voice lessons with this teacher who'd moved to Gresham. She'd won a Metropolitan Opera auditions, regional auditions, or no, national auditions, and I lucked out. She was a really great teacher, Susan St. John. And I, like I told you, faked my way with my ear, which is very strong, but I faked my way through music.
Okay.
And it was sobering to have to suddenly, you know, she had me do these difficult arias and pieces and things. And it was challenging and I liked it and I did well. Doing contests and things like that, and then got a scholarship to University of Oregon School of Music for, you know, vocal studies for music degree. But again, I just felt so out of my depth. I think I had natural abilities, but not sense. You know, I just, the whole theory side of things and technique and all of that, you know, I was just doing everything by feel, like I always had. But I got jobs after college doing, I sang with Capella Romana, which is this really interesting choir in Portland that does like Byzantine Greek chant, Russian, these huge old Baroque Russian pieces, things like that. And it's a really small choir, so it's like one on a part. And traveled with them and toured with them, and I sang with other like early music orchestras and choirs and ensembles during that time that you're talking about. That's the, you know, murky time. You didn't know what I was doing. So I did a lot of performance during that time, but I wasn't performing my own music.
Yeah, as a side woman kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly.
I guess a member of a choir isn't really a side, because a choir means a group of people. But you were in bands that weren't your bands, but you were doing music in front of people.
A lot.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what was the first, Rachel Taylor Brown gig, doing Rachel Taylor Brown music?
Well, it was after I was telling you, I'd been in this, I really was holed up in my house for years. To work through what I was working through, I had to be by myself, because if I was around people, I'd just automatically slip into that default setting of, you know, I don't know, asking about them and, you know, all the things you're taught as a girl to do, you know, I had no energy for the usual type of conversation
at that point.
I was so low that I basically just needed to sit like a lump, and I wrote a lot and I worked through things a lot, but I was seriously depressed. I mean, just really, really, really low. And so when John called me out of the house, you know, and gave my tape to Larry to record, I was really shaky. I mean, I hadn't even really been out. And so the first gig that I did was an open mic at their encouraging, and it was, I was just super, super, super nervous, even though I'd performed a lot. And that was my very first, that's not really a gig, is it?
That's just No, that's a gig, that's a gig. You know, well, me and D. Boone, we decided to split the world into two categories. There was gigs and flyers, and everything that wasn't a gig was a flyer to get people to the gig. So that's bitching. And you know what? Big love to John and Larry. Very grateful to them. Look what they ended the first hour of the November 4, 2018 edition Walk for Pedro show. Special guest, Rachel Taylor Brown. Hold tight for hour two.
Yeah.
November 4, 2018 is second hour of the Walk for Pedro show.
This is a song.
Watch for Pedro show started out the second hour with Rachel Taylor Brown with This Is a Song. Cat Power with Nothing But Time. In Zaire, that's got Fratello Stace coming in January. Third Il Sogno di Marinaio album at Casa Hansa.
Oh, bitchin'. Cool. Yeah,
maybe your 7 days.
Awesome. Very cool.
Yes. And not as cold as Bologna. You believe it or not, it gets fucking cold. Yeah, Jesus. The Eternals with Silhouette. And finally, Rachel Taylor Brown with Susan Storm's Ugly Sister. So you do this first record, and do you start performing it in front of people? You know, you want to put together a band?
I actually started performing pretty frequently after that. After okay. I did that open mic,
yeah.
That led to a gig at that place, and a weekly. And that was just solo. That was me. I was playing guitar mainly at that time, even though piano was my main instrument. I'm not a very good guitarist, but
and easier to carry around.
Pardon?
Easier to carry around.
A lot easier. But yeah, so I started doing a weekly, and then I picked up another one, and then John, who I mentioned,
Painter Man
and bass player, great musician. He suggested I put a band together, and I didn't know for sure if I really wanted to do that. And I decided, okay, I'll go ahead and because I was still, like I said, I was a little like a chihuahua. I have the nervous system of a chihuahua.
You know, I was a meter man in the late 70s, and I'd see about 100 dogs a day. I had to make 400 reads. Yeah, I wrote a poem about it. I never gave a damn about the meter man till I was the man who had to read the meters, man. Yeah, a lot of time to think about it.
Okay. I like that poem. Okay.
So this band, and what'd you call it, the Rachel Taylor Brown Band?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't...
No, yeah. that I think it's good. That way you know who to blame.
Yeah, that's right.
That's why I put my name. There's some projects, if I'm collaborating, It has not my name. If I'm writing the songs, I put my own name in it, so you know who to blame. It's kind of a responsibility thing.
That's why I started cutting my own hair. I didn't want to blame somebody else. I just do it myself.
Raymond cuts his own fucking hair. I don't know how he does it. So that's a trip. What about tour? Now, you're doing just gigs around Portland, right? Did you ever think about tour?
Well, I played with another band, a friend's band, actually a couple.
Okay.
I played keys and sang and played percussion and accordion and whatever. And I toured with him down to through Southern California, Arizona, you know, West Coast.
Okay.
And then I've only done one tour of my own, and it culminated in San Francisco or Oakland at this cafe that we got down there and walked in, and they said, oh, we're not doing shows anymore.
You don't know. Look, I've been through that shit a bunch. You don't know. You're not the only one, okay?
We drove down from Portland.
We call those character builders.
Oh, I was such a character builder. But then we went over to this other place that I'd played with the other band that I'd played in. And they
Rachel, you can name them if you want to.
Well, I'm blanking on the name, and I can't believe... Okay. It's the laundromat. I think Brainwash is still there, and they were so nice to us. We went over there, and we kind of told our sad tale, and they said, well, you know, if you want to play at 11:30 or something, you're welcome to play here. And they gave us free food, and they gave us, like, coffee, and it was really nice.
Yeah. Some people can be beautiful. Other people can be dicks, and other people can be beautiful. You know what? Right now, it's time for us, because I've been jonesing, it's been 2 months, to bring on the Spin Cycle with Brother Matt.
Cool. Okay. Here we go.
So hot, she's got the look. When the night is know mama loved me, I reckon that dad thought I was a pretty good kid. I've been blamed, but I'm not ashamed of a couple of things I did.
Like what?
Well, Dave, I learned the golden rule before I started to school, like every good young'un should do. But what am I worth on God's great earth if I don't mean nothing to you? Well, what am I worth here on earth, darling, if I can't have you? You know, I just can't find no peace of mind in anything that I do. I don't know why you're making me cry. Honey, won't you give me a clue? Cause what am I?
To be president, I'm sure I could do it for you. And they'd feature my face all over the place for all the good things that I do.
No doubt.
Like I might get my name in the Hall of Fame, or even in a book of who's who. But what am I worth on God's great earth if I don't mean nothing to you? Well, what am I worth here on peace of mind with anything that I do. Well, I don't know why you go and make me cry. Honey, won't you give me a clue? Cause what am I worth on God's great earth if I don't mean nothing to you? Here I am.
Are you kidding? When I was your age, I would lug 50 pounds of ice up 5-6 flights of stairs.
So what?
So what? So let's dance.
Seekers in there. Some Crane. Crane was in
there. Crane out of Idaho, right? He's up by Coeur d'Alene.
I had lunch with him. He was in town a couple of weeks
ago. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Came back to the hometown.
Yeah, just passing through. So.
Crane was the bass player and singer for Tragicomedy with John Lachnowski, Dirk Vandenberg.
Some Minutemen trumpet cuts.
Right, right. He's on every song on Project Merce and half of Buzzer Howl Under the Influence of Heat. Mm. Great cat, and he moved up there.
Yeah, seemed like life's treating him pretty good out there.
Yeah, his health?
Yeah.
Is he still kind of big?
He's not as big. Not probably.
As big, good.
He's going to Europe a lot because he got a girlfriend over in Amsterdam.
Okay.
So they keep flip-flopping.
You know, there was one improv project I did with him. I found a tape of it called Faux Fum. And I don't think we did one gig. It was called Faux Fum. And I think there was 15 dudes in the band.
That's a great name.
I think I played mandolin.
Yeah. Oh.
So, what made you do what you just did? It was your Crane visit?
Well, I had this Thrill Seekers I got at the retirement party.
Yeah.
And so I hadn't checked that out until just recently, and they had a bunch of cool tunes on there, so I figured you got to bust those out.
Bust it out.
And Crane gave me a couple things when he was in town, so I figured.
Is he making music up there?
He's still doing his thing.
Okay, great.
Euphoria's Destination, I think. You can find him on Facebook. So, he's still doing his Crane stuff, his lounge stuff. You got a variety of.
He's got to make his own website.
Yeah, I think
he shouldn't let that one guy be the fucking, what do you call it, gatekeeper.
Yeah.
You know? But dangerous. It's like fanzines. That's why I thought the internet was going to be. Everybody have their own website.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Don't have to go to a Jan Wenner and a...
One dude clamping down.
What was that, Rolling Stone magazine?
Yeah.
You don't need that. Although, Brother Matt, Rolling Stone magazine said they liked our radio
show. Yeah, they got some taste on the radio shows.
That's right. Very good. Okay.
You're in good company, Rachel.
Yeah, you're in good company. So, That tour you did, you came back to it. Was it any of it useful for further music endeavor?
I don't think so. Well, you know, it was useful in the personal character building aspect.
Yeah.
But I don't think I'd say it was useful in any kind of professional way. But I don't know if
What I've always come to understand is whenever you do a gig, it's kind of like practice for the next gig.
Yeah.
Okay. It's never wasted. So tell me about this, the actual new record. How'd that come about?
Any record, I always think in albums. I think of a record as one piece, and I know that's kind of out of favor right now.
No, not really, because I've done three operas.
Yeah, you know, I read that, and I think that's so interesting. I actually would love to ask you more about that, because...
Well, the idea that you can't say everything in one song, unless it's a big song with a lot of parts.
And I feel the same way, yeah. I feel the same way, and that's how I tend to think in albums. I see it as one piece, and I prefer that people listen. You know, I know it's asking a lot, but I prefer that people listen... Because I think it transitions a lot. I think of sequencing a lot when I'm doing. Actually, it sort of happens as I'm going along and writing songs. But usually, I don't have any kind of method to writing. I don't know if you do, but
I start with the title.
Pardon?
I do. I start with the title.
Oh, really?
I wouldn't shit you. Did you listen to the last show? I had John Elderkin on, and he had his opera called Moonbeams No Mas. And it was kind of like part two, he told me, of his reaction to Ziggy Stardust in the Rise and Fall of the Rise and Fall of Ziggy Stardust and the Spiders from Mars, which was a coincidence because David Bowie passed away. Yeah, that was really interesting. So, you know, there's no one way to do any of this stuff, okay? That's why I'm interested in your process. Okay, so when this new record came, there was a big collection of ideas, and you just wanted to find some way to manifest it?
Well, I just write all the time with no real method. And so whatever I happen to be thinking at the time or whatever's in the air and what, you know, whatever happens to be in me at that time is what I'm writing about. And a lot of times I'm not really aware of, you know, really clearly of what it is until I put together the album. You know, I sometimes think, oh, are these even related? And then I'll put together and I realize I'm kind of thinking about the same thing with all the songs, which makes sense because you're writing them kind of in the same time frame.
So let me get this straight. At first you tell me an album is a whole, but then you're saying
right.
You go into making the album with a collection of songs. And so is that where you like pick and choose?
Well, yeah, but they're not really, because when I'm writing them...
No, not when you write them, once they're done.
Right, when I'm writing them, they go together.
Oh, okay.
When I'm writing them, I start playing them together, when I'm just playing through them and practicing them, and they just go together. They just start to go together. The ones that are meant to go together just start to go together.
And by go together, that could mean lyrically or harmonically?
I just like how one runs into the next one.
Okay.
You know, like I'll finish one, and then I'll want to start playing another one because I like the transition.
Sure.
I like the sound of, you know, the one key going to the other, or the mood of the one going into the other. And I'll frequently have, like, most of an album sequenced before I even record it, just because that's how I hear it in my head. That's how I've heard it in my head. That's how it just sort of sorted itself out in my head.
Sure, sure.
And, yeah, and so...
But, like, if I can give my shit as an example...
Okay.
This first opera, it's going to be Use My Pop's Life in the Navy to talk about the Minutemen. Second opera, I got sick and almost died, but I didn't. Third opera, I'm going to talk about being a middle-aged punk rocker. So I start with a big focus, a big goal, and then I try to rally all the shit to make that happen.
Yeah, that's one way. The one album I did that with was a holiday, like a winter album. That it's like this EP that I wrote in one day. It's seven songs, and I had actually, as a joke, a friend and I had challenged each other, or I challenged this friend, to write a holiday album in one day. So he declined, but I decided, oh, what the hell, I'll do it. And so I wrote these seven songs in one day, put them aside, forgot them, actually, because I'd written them so quickly. And then I wound up recording them when I was recording something else, with Jeff Stuart Saltzman. And I had to relearn them. I had to look them up and relearn them. But that was the only thing where I think I decided, okay, I'm going to write a group of songs that are based on this. And then I did it. Otherwise, it's a very, lazy kind of going with the flow process for me. It's not lazy in the work that's involved, but it just sort of, whenever I put an album out, my brain's sort of been in one place. And in this case, it was, you know, kind of an obvious place. And that's the sort of dystopian, you know, atmosphere that we're finding ourselves in, from a local level to a world level. In Portland, there's been so much freaking change that your head spins. I mean, the last 18 years, it's been like... the place is different from week to week. You'll look at a street, there's no cars parked on it. The next week, suddenly there's 100 cars parked on it, and that's the new paradigm. That's what's going to happen from now on. And it's just been in this constant state of growth, constant state of construction. And I know this is happening in many places all over the U.S., but Portland's changed so much. We finally moved to the outskirts last year because, you know, I love that city. I grew up, spent most of my life there, and we just couldn't take it anymore. We just, you know, I went through all of this mourning for Portland. Now I don't even know if I care about it anymore.
Did you ever see our former guest, Fred, up there? Fred Armisen, Portlandia man?
Yeah. Fred came on the show. Drummer man. Right? Look, well, Russ,
he's gotten a lot of flack, I know. I know Portlandia's been blamed for a lot of what's happening.
Oh, Carrie too, though. That ain't all Fred's. You got to blame Carrie. No, they're good. I like both those people very much. I don't really know the show, but I like those people very much. Look, we're at the end of the second.
Did you talk about that at all?
Rachel, we're at the end of the second hour.
Listen to the show.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
November 4th. We'll get to this in the third hour. 2018. Special guest, Rachel Taylor Brown. Hold tight for hour three. November 4th, 2018. It's the third hour of the Watt from Pedro show.
family forming a heart shape. Family taking a walk. Family taking a walk outside. Attractive family of four. Attractive family of four. Attractive family of four. Attractive family of four. Family in the lake. Family and daughter in the woods. Family in the lake. Family looking at the water on the dock. Family taking a walk. Family at the lake. Happy family. Mother and son. Dad playing with his new baby. Mother playing with her baby. Couple with their daughter. Father holding son happy. New mother kissing baby's forehead. Attractive family of four. Close up of a beautiful happy family together. Children's hand in hand of an adult. Family walking in the mall holding hands and smiling. Newborn baby sleeping in a father's arms. Man and young girl relaxing on bed and bedroom smiling. Family together on bed and bedroom smiling. Father and daughter relaxing on bed and bedroom smiling. Family relaxing on bed and bedroom smiling. Man and two young children walking in the mall holding hands and smiling. Man and young boy walking in the mall holding hands and smiling. Man walking in the mall smiling. Man walking in the mall smiling. Family walking in the mall holding hands and smiling. Family walking in the mall holding hands and smiling. Family standing in the mall smiling. Woman and two young children walking in the mall and smiling. Family standing in the mall smiling. Woman and young girl walking in the mall smiling. Family standing in the mall smiling. Woman and boy walking in the mall smiling. Couple walking in the mall holding hands and smiling. Family standing in the mall smiling. Family walking in the mall holding hands and smiling.
Watt for Pedro Show started the third hour off with the family. Then we had Simon Bird doing Baltimore Drowning. And then Mold Omen out of Baltimore. Or what they say there, Balmore.
Balmer?
Yeah, right, Balmer. Yeah. John Waters.
He burns his muscles.
Alms. I guess Alms is a... Right?
Your
favorite, you donates.
Yeah.
Right? And then Rachel Taylor Brown with Litany of the Family. So two family songs. What's that about?
Well, the last, you know what I was saying about whatever my brain's been on is what, how the album comes out and kind of puts itself together. And for my previous album, it was called Falamy, which was, you know, a play on family. And it's all about family, you know, in its various forms, whether it's your actual blood family or it's the family that you make with your friends and your
To me, there's a big distinction because you can't pick that other family. You're born with them. The other ones you actually pick. But
that's
they say
right.
The test of your true humanity is your family because you don't pick them. So somebody got to get along with you.
The
yeah.
Biggest,
yeah.
The biggest.
So it was about that and kind of from the greater context, too, of, you know, all humans. And so that whole album is about family. There's several songs directly relating to family on there.
Well, let's talk about this record. What was the big idea?
For the current one?
Yeah.
I guess just, to me, it's always what interests me most and what I return to all the time in my writing is how people handle things. You know, how people handle life and the challenges that are presented to them and, you know, the weird human tics and reactions that we have and defenses and, you know, just the way we cope. And,
or not.
Yeah. And I think that's, you know, we're really dreadful at it in a lot of ways, but then there are these moments of beauty in how people cope with life. And both sides attract me, you know, anyway, in this album, I think Americans and people the world over, we're in a really interesting time, where there's a lot of scary, not entirely unique stresses pushing in on everyone, but one that is unique, I think, is the climate change thing.
Right.
And,
you know, when I was a young Minuteman, I remember one of the first songs I wrote for the band, one of the lyrics was, I try to go to work and I keep thinking of World War III. I try to talk to girls and I keep thinking of World War III. I think there's always been some stressy kind of things. I was only 22 years old. I hadn't really written many songs. I was new at it. But
that's a great song.
It's called Paranoid Chant. I don't know. It was the last song.
I like it.
The last song on our first record. And you know, you got to be careful about the last song because we read from left to right. So it kind of is like a mathematical equation, you know, the equal signs. This is the summation.
Yeah.
And I really had trouble with that with my third opera because I didn't want any beginning and end. I wanted it all middle because it's about middle age.
Now, is that the one, the third opera? Bosch, is that right?
Well, I used him. Oh, I shouldn't say that. I appropriated his imagery.
I don't think you have any danger of like copyright with him anymore.
It's not that. It's just a question of integrity. And you know what?
That's a great inspiration, I think. Oh
well, what
God.
It was the imagery. When I was a boy,
right?
Because I'm born in '57, Sputnik, so I'm way into astronauts. I got into dinosaurs, and then my mom got these. World Book Encyclopedia, and I found Hieronymus Bosch and them little creatures.
That's a little terrifying for a kid to find.
I don't act on it until, you know, my 50s. And then what I do is
acted on it.
Yeah, I made an opera out of it.
Okay.
And I took 30.
You were reenacting it.
I took 30 of the little men, and I used them as, because my guess is he was actually doing aphorisms. Because there's one guy whose nose is like a horn. He's playing it.
Yeah.
We say that, blowing your own horn. So right. I don't know 500-600-year-old Dutch, so I just made up my own shit to tell the story of what it's like to be middle-aged, you know, because I never thought about that stuff much. So that's where I use that. So I'm industry. Okay, so, you know, at the end of the day, when you're, because you said there's beauty and then there's dystopia, do you think they're in balance, or one side wins out a little bit more?
I am more of a... I'm not a pessimist.
Okay, good.
What about cynic? I would describe myself as a realist.
Cynic. So, what about cynic? No?
Yeah, I would say I'm a little bit of a cynic.
What about skeptic?
I'm sorry?
Skeptic.
I can't hear you.
S-C-E-P-T-I-C.
Oh, yeah, skeptic, yes. Definitely a skeptic.
But what's the problem with skepticism?
I don't see a problem with skepticism.
Yeah, because if you're too skeptic, you got to be skeptical about skepticism. it's a nightmare dilemma. Mr. Wittgenstein again. Okay. Look, tell me about this song, Wedding Song, Bag of Bones.
Well, it's the one love song on the album.
Okay, let's listen.
Bag of Bones. Thank you.
Sister Jean. Give our life, Sister Jean. Give our life, Sister Jean. Give our life, Sister Jean. Oh, Sister Jean. Give our life, Sister Jean. Give our life, Sister Jean. Give our life, Sister Jean.
Sister Jean, we have our lives.
Watch for Pedro Show. Rachel Taylor Brown with the only love song from the album, Wedding Song, Bag of Bones. Then Karu Crew out of Tokyo with Summer Galaxian Explosion. Now out of England with London, A Good Natured Serpent. And finally, Sister Jean, Rachel Taylor Brown. Rachel, what's your future plans?
Oh, geez. Do I have any future plans?
I don't know. That's why I asked you.
I just try to get down what's in my head. I write constantly, and I love writing. I love the whole process. I love getting an idea and sitting down and writing it. And so for me, it's just, and I can't keep up recording-wise with what I write, so I have this backlog of stuff that I always want to get to.
That's good. And,
Willie Dixon
did
too.
Yeah, it's a nice fit.
Yeah, Brother Matt went to Willie Dixon's house once, and he opened up a drawer. What, like
hundreds of songs.
Hundreds of songs that were never recorded. Willie Dixon,
yeah.
Right? Spoonful.
Wow.
And the bass man, too.
Well, hats off to bass man Jim, yeah. from the Longhorns, man. Lazy Lance of the Longhorns.
Yeah.
He was at the party a few months ago. He got smelled bacon.
Yeah.
He loved to eat, but all of a sudden he smelled bacon, started getting sick when he smelled bacon. He had pain in his back.
Yeah.
They said, oh, fuck, you got
what?
You got pancreatic cancer, lung cancer, liver cancer.
Oh,
you only
shit.
Got 3 months to live, and you only had, like, less than 3 weeks.
And so, he smelled bacon? And
when he would smell it, it would make him sick instead
trippy.
Of, like, digging on it.
And
it's
trippy because Lance Law, this man has had so much tumors cut out of him. He survived.
Stage 4, 7 tumors.
Oh, people, we don't. So, you know, I think the lesson to be learned here, Rachel, Brother Matt, we don't know how much time we got.
Yeah, future
plans. So we
got to
pack it in. We got to pack it in.
Future
so if you're building
now.
Up a backlog, that ain't a bad thing.
Go big.
Yeah, go big. Go hard. It's been the November 4th, 2018 edition of Wap Peter Show. Everybody, keep their powder dry.
Yeah.